like Macho Man Randy Savage. The liberals are coming off the top ropes on the oil and gas industries with a chair called Green Energy Fantasies. Meanwhile, the green agenda sees its face everywhere while gas prices soar and these alternative energy solutions are expensive and unreliable. And despite all of their purist rhetoric, the liberals reluctantly live in the same world as the rest of us do, as it approves drilling off of Newfoundland's coast. Hi, I'm Michael Thiessen. That guy over there is Tim Tyso, and this is Liberty Dispatch.
Ladies and gentlemen, we may be approaching a fateful hour.
Bonhoeffer spoke by radio to a national audience. He delivered one of the first public criticisms of the new chancellor.
Never give in. Never, never, never. In nothing, great or small, large or petty, never give in except to convictions of honor and good sense.
Welcome back to Liberty Dispatch, broadcasting across enemy lines into Canada's culture war. Mike, it's good to be on the show with you today. Dear listeners, thank you for joining us once again. If you're new to the show, you might be watching on Rumble. Don't forget to subscribe to our channel there at the Liberty Coalition Canada. If you're listening on podcast, we're very thankful you're here as well. Whether it's Apple Podcasts, Podbean, Spotify, wherever it is, please follow the show or subscribe and give us a 5-star rating. And we would appreciate that. Whether we've earned it or not is a matter for another day, but we would love that 5-star rating. Also, go to the website, libertycoalitioncanada.com, and you can subscribe to our email list there. And that's going to help you keep up to date with our videos, our Liberty U releases, our Liberty Defense Fund, and all things advocacy and awareness and education from this institution. While you're there, you can also become a financial partner. Whether that's monthly or as a one-time donation, you can help build up this institution. And we laid out in last week's episode why that's so important right now to actually invest in media alternatives and news alternatives and analysis alternatives so that you can get an alternative to the mainstream mono narrative. Mike, we have oil back on the docket today. You had some fun making a video again with Liberty U. How did that go? How are you feeling about oil today? Even as the temperatures are finally mellowing out here in Canada, this is something we desperately need to talk about.
Yeah, so we did produce another video last week. We released a video about media bias in Canada. And this week we are releasing a video about our oil production in Canada and whether or not these green policies are very good. So we released that just yesterday, and we're excited about it. It went well, and we're talking about this, Tim, because it's a real problem for Canadians, this liberal mindset running towards what they're calling a green economy. Right. And I like the metaphor you chose. I amped it up, adding yes. Macho Man Randy Savage or Randy the Macho Man Savage, depending on who we're debating. Like, it really feels like a WWF wrestler jumping mm-hmm. off the top rope with a chair, hitting Canadians, saying, we've got to go green for the sake of the world. We're going to analyze the National Post today. We have an article called The Liberal Plan to Smother the energy industry. Here are a few quotes from the Post. Liberals are either governing in a fantasy universe or they are being deliberately reckless. How else do you explain in the same week our European allies were preparing to ration energy? Listen to that. To ration energy, being held hostage as they are by a murderous tyrant wreaking havoc in Ukraine. Our government announced a dramatic acceleration of its plan to hobble the oil and gas industry. So what we have coming out of the National Post is, again, that's April 1st, 2022. We have this observation that our country is doing the opposite of what it should be doing in the midst of what's going on in the real world. And you and I have talked about how that's an opinion piece from the Post, doesn't have a published author on it. One more quote from the article, and then I'll pass it over to you, Tim. Germany was foolish to phase out nuclear power and coal, especially as quickly as it had planned. leaving it at the mercy of unreliable wind energy and natural gas imports from Russia. Prime Minister Justin Trudeau and Environment Minister Stephen Guilbeault refuse to learn any lessons from these recent events. They've ignored the reality that our allies phasing out fossil fuels has done little to move their economies to green energy.
So that might be one of the most poignant pieces from the article is Prime Minister and his environment minister refuse to learn. And this is really this is the calling card of an ideologue rather than a governor, rather than somebody who manages the world as it really is and is able to flex with the changes in either geopolitics, advent of war, famine, drought, whatever. You adapt. And this is what we fail to see from the liberals is that, as you pointed out, Germany, we covered this in our last oil episode, Germany put out a notice to ration energy use because they, geopolitically, there's this big push to embargo Russian oil. Well, of course, if you don't have your own oil supply and it's not a windy day in the middle of, you know, March in Northern Europe, you're going to have an issue. And so Canada, who also relies a great deal on Russian energy and on foreign imports at large, is doing exactly what Germany did and is suffering for, which is moving away from domestic oil production and reliance to foreign oil. But when a geopolitical issue arises, suddenly there's a real pinch at the taps. And so instead of actually acknowledging the devastating effect that's taking place in Europe, and the way that Russia is moving toward Chinese exports, so strengthening that that foreign policy tie, instead of acknowledging these things, in the very same week, we are announcing here in Canada further restrictions and further acceleration of this so-called green energy, which has proven everywhere to be unreliable. These are at best supplementary or backup systems, but they're expensive. They cannot support a power grid the size of Canada and the needs of Canada. We live in a northern climate. And they double down on this language. So when they acknowledge that prices are soaring because of these embargoes, they turn around and say, well, this is evidence all the more that we need to move away from oil. Even though having just done that, Germany is now suffering and rationing in its peak usage. It's a refusal to learn. And that's the terror behind these ideologues at the helm of our federal government.
So I want to draw everyone's attention to three keywords in the article, and then I'm going to repeat a little bit of what you said and tie it together, Tim. So first of all, ration. So again, Canadians, we're getting used to like lining up outside of Walmart because the space inside of Walmart is rationed in order to keep the air clean. We're getting used to our government saying, oh, you know what? We can't perform that service for you in a timely manner because we've rationed our time in order to keep everybody home and safe from a flu. The word ration is a dangerous word for a first world nation. It means that something is wrong when rationing is occurring. You know, you ration food when you go into a famine. So when you have people observing this worldwide phenomenon of people rationing energy, this word should alarm people. I was going to say it's not a neutral word. It's a very loaded word that should alarm people. Okay. The next word is, Tim, you've used it, but you're drawing it from the article. It is the word unreliable. And again, people can't just skim over that. What you just said, Tim, about it being unreliable source of energy, not being able to support a power grid, that is a real reality. And I've commented last week that when you cripple an energy sector, you just can't bring it back online. Like when you cut your supply, you can't just bring it back online if you have an extra cold day. It truly is an unreliable situation. And then the third story or the third word that I want to bring up is this idea of phasing out. And it goes exactly to your point, Tim. Look, let's just try to think of this as an analogy. Tim, you go to the grocery store and you find out that vegetables are skyrocketing in price, so much so that it's becoming unrealistic for your family to afford it. Any common sense person would say, wow, I had better learn how to garden. Like, if we're really going into a situation where food is going to be expensive and rationed, I better learn how to garden. But Tim, their logic is equal to somebody saying, okay, I'm going to the grocery store. Vegetables are insanely priced and there's very few of them. So what we need to make sure that we do is to figure out how to eat rubber, or we need to figure out how to change our diet. And that diet would be to eat crickets, which, by the way, we're hearing all this type of nonsense, but you see how, you know, Tim, I want you to comment on that. Like, it's just ludicrous. Of course, if you can't have a supply that is coming far away from you, the logical decision would be to supply yourself, to produce yourself and to fend for yourself.
So there's a couple strands going on here. We are advocates of oil production, free market access. We believe this is the solution to high oil prices. We're also talking about a government, and this is sort of more the focus that we're working on. We're also talking about a government whose policies are akin to what you just described. Instead of looking at high price of vegetables and figuring out how we can lower the cost and make sure vegetables are accessible, what we're saying is we need to move away from vegetable consumption. Okay? Because the ground basis is that we can just do whatever we want and people just need to adapt to it, rather than saying we were built a certain way and we have certain needs. And when we say that the Liberal government is coming off the top ropes, I want to read a quote to you from Stephen Guilbeault in the Narwhal. He is quoted as saying, we have to decarbonize our society. He's not just talking about one sector. He's talking about our society. We need to decarbonize, period. And that includes transportation. And we've made a number of commitments on that, some previous to the last election campaign, but certainly since then as well. That's 2021. We want to decarbonize the steel sector, the cement sector, the auto sector, the aluminum sector, and the oil and gas sector. And I'll be working with them, and I'm working with others. They talk about automotive emissions being zero emissions vehicles by, as we looked at in the emissions report, getting down to zero emissions sales, 100% of new cars in the next 15 years. We're talking about a radical transformation and decarbonization of the entire Canadian sector without any regard to the cost to the consumer, the cost of real lives and real people who suffer in the midst of those transitions. And frankly, it's ludicrous. This is an attack on sustainability. It's an attack on security, oil security, energy security, transportation security, which is critical in Canada, food security, which we bring in a lot of foreign food from the United States, from warmer climates. We're talking about the livelihoods and quality of life for millions of Canadians, literally on the mat, on the ground, as Macho Man comes down with the chair saying, time for green energy. Boom. It's so aggressive, and they're admitting it. They're admitting how fast they're moving and how drastic the transition is going to feel. And that should worry Canadians. And they're disconnected from reality and from the cost of these policies.
I think you've heard the term take it and like it. I think that's what we're being dished out here. Okay, let's move on.
Yeah, I want to take you to an episode of Cross Country Checkup, which was reportable in and of itself. Article came out from CBC summarizing this Cross Country Checkup interview with two energy think tank representatives. And the point here that we're trying to get across is that for green energy thinkers, the solution is everywhere they look, and it's always in the mirror. Everywhere they look, green energy is the solution. So, war crisis in Eastern Europe, green energy is the solution. I mean, John Kerry even went on I think it was 60 Minutes and said, you know, what we really need to be concerned about with energy in Ukraine is this is going to really set back the climate agenda because we know that war is a very carbon heavy activity. I mean, the these people, they can't stop thinking about it. They can't stop talking about it. They can't stop proposing it. And for them, it's the solution to everything. So
Biden's entire first speech as a response to Ukraine was about the energy crisis. Like you're sitting there going,
yeah,
if they really believed it, it's almost like they're fixated on Armageddon and they've really truly can't get anything out of their mind other than that.
So as gas prices basically soared 60% in a matter of, what would you say, a week, maybe? We saw gas around $1.20. It hit $1.80, $90, $2 in some places in Quebec almost overnight. And what do these green energy people, how do they respond? This is Jackie Forrest speaking on Cross Country Checkup. She said, as we go out 2, 3, 4 years, we are probably going to see a faster energy transition than we would have otherwise. Conveniently, the green agenda, it's actually going to speed up. It's going to go all the more quickly than we'd even anticipated, which ironically, that's what Stephen Guilbeault was saying after the election. We're going to move faster than we thought we were. This messaging has been around for months. And suddenly Ukraine and Russia takes place and lo and behold, the green energy transition is going to speed up. I mean, imagine that. It's what they promised. It's what they're doing. And now it's what is necessary. She said, the good thing about renewables and clean energy is a lot more of it is domestically produced, and it has more energy sector attributes to it than oil and gas from many countries. For me, the overwhelming lesson that we can learn from what's happening in the oil markets today is that oil markets can be too volatile. So that is from the executive director of the ARC Energy Research Institute in Calgary. So the first thing I want to point out is oil volatility. That's a reason we need to move away from oil because the market is clearly too volatile. Well, I mean, that it's damaging. It damages the economy. It's unpredictable. So what we need to do is go from a volatile energy market to something, you know, reliable like wind energy. I mean, I'll just leave that there for you. But the volatility, folks, is produced by political intervention. The reason we have skyrocketing prices is because we rely on oil from foreign countries. And when the geopolitical landscape demands an embargo, we are suddenly literally scrounging. If you've ever heard of the concept of supply and demand, when the supply decreases and the demand remains the same, the price goes up. That's how it works. It's like the law of gravity. It's just what is there. And so the volatility is as if it's just this natural phenomenon where we just never know when prices are going to spike or drop or anything in between. Folks, when the lockdowns were implemented in Canada in early 2020, prices plummeted. Why? Because nobody was traveling. So demand went down and supply was the same. So you saw, I filled up at, I think, 61 cents 2 years ago. So it's an iron law of supply and demand, and volatility has nothing to do with natural phenomenon. It has everything to do with government intervention, government restricting domestic supply, restricting domestic so-called carbon production. And then they turn around and they say, well, we can't rely on this energy. It's volatile. So it's a fabricated problem with a false solution.
The thing that is so specific about this is that the Canadian oil and natural gas companies are the ones being hindered. So it's not like that the industry is even far away facing regulation and facing, you know, manipulation by the governments. We're talking about if we were to crank up Canadian oil, Canadian natural gas, if we were to export it to the United States via pipelines, if we were to keep and supply our own people with it. This is what Justin Trudeau calls you and I over nationalists. I can't remember exactly what the press release, but it was like over nationalism. Because we would think of actually producing oil at a price that is really, really low, and then we would have a reliable heat source. Yes, that's over nationalistic to be thinking of Canadians. And
it's
so
populist. It's Trump. It's Trump politics. It's just the slanderous. Canada should be protected. It should be celebrated, and it should be. We should supply for our own. Those are anathema to the globalist agenda. No, we need to rely on global markets purely because that makes us safe from the accusation of nationalism.
Well, yeah, but we need to rely on global markets just in case, just until we tell you not to rely on global markets and to leave the global market. So, you know, we're cutting off the vegetable supply. We're hiking the prices of the vegetables. Crickets, you know, it depends on whether you caught 10 or 20 that week. And we should switch to the crickets because that's going to be more reliable than the spiking up and down of carrots that we are controlling. Like it's just a terrible, terrible policy for Canadians. Tim, the other thing I want to draw upon here as we're talking about this volatility, as we're talking about this situation, is how much this is driven by this agenda and how much this is driven by these individuals. It's just such a harmful policy.
Well, Mike, the other thing I wanted to point out about this quote from Jackie Forrest is that she claims that green energy is more domestically friendly. It's more domestically accessible, which it just, these are energy research executive directors. These are think tank professionals saying things like, green energy, now that's a domestic product. Canada is the second largest oil reserve nation in the world. We have access to enough fuel, to enough oil, to supply this country for centuries. And Jackie Hill gets out there and says, Jackie Forrest says, we need domestic energy. But this is exactly the problem, is that we're precluding the obvious offloading and exporting of raw fuel production to other countries. And then we import it in back from them. And we say, well, this is too volatile. We need something domestic. Rather than stick a drill in the ground in Alberta and get oil for this country, for this country's needs, the solution, and this is the point in the introduction that we said, the solution somehow is always green energy. For them, if you're a green energy think tank, the solution is always, well, we need to build more windmills. Why isn't it we need to drill more oil out of the ground? Because they have a pre-commitment not to do that.
I want to jump in on this idea because I wanted to mention this earlier. You know that we have this thing called the Niagara Falls, right? Where we already draw an incredible amount of renewable energy every single year from our hydro plants. We have an incredible ability to produce electricity in this country via our hydro plants. So what you have in Canada right now is you have for hydro, like for you know, electricity going into your home, we produce so much electricity that we sell to the United States. So we've got great hydroelectrical solution. And then for things like gas-operated machinery, we have oil reserves. Like this country, if our government was committed to providing cheap, reliable, cheap, you know, high BTU, keep your house warm electricity, we would be leading the world in lowering costs for Canadians. And the reality of it is all of the high costs that we face, both in taxation and in policy, reflect on affecting Canadians right in their wallet every single day.
Essentially, what it comes down to is the government produces a problem. Because I'll tell you, you don't have to motivate oil companies to drill for oil. You know why? Because they have shareholders, stockholders, and interested stakeholders who want profits. They get drills in the ground. They find the oil. They get it out. They refine it. They produce it. They ship it. Okay? It's profitable as can be. Government comes in, says, you can't do that. It's not environmentally friendly. X, Y, Z. And by the way, Canada is among the greenest and clean, oh, the cleanest oil producing countries in the whole world, as far as environmental policies and friendliness. But that's besides the point. You don't need to motivate private industry to find oil and produce it and sell it. So the government creates a problem, and then the government proposes a solution. And this brings me to my second research person, energy think tank person. This is Chris Severson Baker of the Pembina Institute, which is a Canadian clean energy think tank. He argues that now is the time for strategic investment in renewables led by, listen to this, everybody wait for it, the federal government. Somehow the solution always lies with the federal government. We have a energy crisis. We have rising gas costs. You know what we need? The federal government. We need an investment in renewables led by the federal government. You know why the federal government needs to lead it? Because it's not profitable. No private company is doing this because there's nothing to present your shareholders. So the government comes along with your money and says, don't worry, we'll pick up the tab. I have no problem walking into a bar with somebody else's wallet and saying, I'll buy the tab, open bar tonight. It doesn't matter if it's wise or profitable or sustainable. It doesn't matter because they have a near endless supply of money. And by the way, what they don't raise in taxes, they print at the printing press because they own that too. The corruption here is front page, it's headline. They're admitting that it must be a public entity because there is no private investment. This, by the way, is what happened when Keystone XL, which the Liberals were supportive of, they couldn't get it through BC. This was a totally private enterprise. So in order to save the investment, what did the federal government do? They bought the pipeline for billions of dollars. They publicized it. The pipeline never got built. Thousands of people lost jobs. And we sit here three or four or five years later in a total energy crisis because the federal government failed to even allow a project to go forward that had private investment. So in comes the federal government with the solution. It's amazing how the solution is always public money, federal government intervention, and you know, leadership from the public sector.
And favoring certain energy sources that it calls renewable. I'm going back to this hydro statement. According to the International Hydropower Association, Canada is the fourth largest producer of hydroelectricity in the world in 2021, after United States, Brazil, and China. In 2014, Canada consumed the equivalent of 85.7 megatons worth of oil of hydroelectricity. In some provinces and territories, such as British Columbia, Manitoba, Newfoundland, and Labrador, Quebec, Yukon, they produce over 90% of their electricity from hydro. Of all of the large reservoirs that were completed before 1990, which is when most of the development was done, Natural Resources Canada calculates that a current installed small hydro capacity with an estimated potential of 15,000 megawatts could add, of course, to all of our needs. A report of future hydroelectricity suggests that we have 78% more potential that will remain underdeveloped, citing a lack of public acceptance. Like, the reality of it is that not only are they forcing us to unreliable sources, they're forcing us to very specific technologies that have proven to be unreliable. And like you said, Tim, the solution is not to let private investors, private companies come and do these things. It's to villainize them. It's to villainize certain types of electricity. And then it is to create the government as the new supplier. And I'm on this hydro point, Tim, because we have such an ability to make energy cheap in Canada. Like, we have such an ability to make energy cheap and reliable and hot and warm, right, and useful in this country. We should have the lowest energy costs in the world. You go over the border to the United States, And right now, even with what's going on with Ukraine and all of the other situations, the Americans are complaining because they're paying gas prices that are usually on average half of what we pay.
And it's a frustration to them. I want to go back to Chris Severson here, who he in Cross Country Checkup, he said the government, it just makes your skin crawl. The government could mandate emissions reductions requirements, and the industry would have both the technologies and the money to implement those technologies to actually achieve those emissions reductions targets, he said. Quote, if we don't make some decisions in the next few months, we're not going to be able to meet targets that are critical to meet in order to keep the climate from moving beyond the dangerous level. So I don't even have time to unpack all of that. But of course, the crisis demands that we act right now. The crisis demands that the federal government mandate what the oil companies do with their profits, which is they force them to invest in, quote, clean energies. And we're all going to die if we don't do it. Everywhere they look, the crisis solution lands in their lap. If you do it this way, it will work. And I just want to share an anecdote that I just have in my head. It's been bouncing around for almost 10 years now. I heard this on the radio, a discussion about this is what it looks like when the federal government or the government invests in, quote, clean energy. Then you mentioned Niagara Falls. We have generators there that convert water flow into electricity, and we ship that off to New York. We obviously power our grid here in Ontario. And we spent $9 billion refurbishing and adding generators to Niagara Falls. $9 billion. It's a fantastic investment. When's the last time Niagara Falls dried up or stopped flowing? It is literally the most prolific energy source in Ontario. It's fantastic. However, during the Dalton McGuinty Liberal provincial government, they struck a deal with a foreign, I believe it was Samsung, a foreign company to come in and build windmills. And they signed a contract for energy production to these windmill companies. So what happens is on a windy day, Ontario, where we own our $9 billion generators in Niagara Falls, we shut down our power generation at Niagara Falls and we take the energy produced from the windmills and we pay a foreign company for energy while we shut down the energy that we own. This is what happens when the public sector becomes the arbiter of who gets to produce energy and how. So in order to satisfy the green energy people, which by the way, water is green energy, but apparently wind is greener because wind was very trendy 10 years ago. We had to get wind energy. So we pay foreign company on a windy day. We shut down the energy we already own. It is bonkers. They don't care about you. They don't care about your money. They don't care about how warm your house is. They care about signing pledges and meeting arbitrary targets so they can pat themselves on the back and they can go into the record books as having done something ostensibly for this green agenda. This is what public leadership looks like on the energy front. It is a disaster, and that is an understatement. And we have to stop letting people like Stephen Guilbeault get up and grandstand and parade around and say, we need to move quickly in the green energy front. No, we don't. And if we do, you're the last guy I trust to do it. Canadians need to start thinking like that. We have to stop accepting the premise that the federal government has the solution, and the solution is more of your money and less of your freedom. That seems to be sort of the magic mix for government fixing these issues.
I know sometimes when we start these podcasts, Tim, you and I are really confident about how the theme is going to come together. And I think what I've heard back and forth between the two of us is the reality of it is when you combine our ability to produce oil, our ability to produce natural gas, our ability to produce hydroelectricity, any policy that infringes upon the production of those three natural resources is an arbitrary policy that stands in the way of Canadians living cheaply. And I've felt this way for years. Like, we sell our energy to the United States. We make a ton of energy. We do not need to be paying high energy costs. And what you just said there is just another example of how Canadians, and this leads us to our third story, Tim, because this story comes again from the National Post, and this is Kelly McParland, and she talks about how in the midst of all of this grandstanding, in the midst of all of this Puritan Trumpism, how the liberals have actually okayed oil drilling off of the coast of Newfoundland. So this is Kelly McParland, the former climate activist and tower climber. Again, she's talking about Stephen Guilbeault, did get to oversee the latest increase in the carbon tax, confirming the liberals' conviction that pushing up prices for people struggling to pay their gasoline bills is the route to meeting climate goals. But whatever satisfaction he may have had, he may have gained, had to be dampened by the announcement Ottawa had given the green light to a Norwegian company to set up a massive drilling project 500 kilometers off Newfoundland.
Does that sound familiar?
Yeah, Tim, it does sound familiar. And just let me finish this quote here. According to Quebec's La Presse, Guilbeault didn't want to approve Bay du Nord, but was voted down in cabinet. And I think you're a good listener, and you'll help everyone listen and explain what that means. So now his former pals at Greenpeace and that climate campaign are actually firing raspberries his way and questioning his commitment to the cause. Quote, "The world is on fire. Why is Canada considering massive new drilling?" wondered The Guardian, the favored publication of Britain's left. So listen to that. You have our prime minister saying we've got to run, sprint, just, you know, rip off all of our clothing and run nude and sacrifice our children to the god of green energy. And then turning around, Guilbeault really didn't want to approve this, but the cabinet. Tell people what that means, Tim.
Yeah. So essentially the Liberal government, as we said in the introduction, unfortunately cannot escape the world that the rest of us live in, which is that we still do have energy needs. Justin Trudeau still has to fill his campaign bus. He still has to fill his prime ministerial jet. He still has to get his envoy over to Paris for the next climate agreement. We still live, I mean, he still has to heat Rideau Cottage, right? This is still the reality in Canada, that we cannot get off fossil fuels, and we don't need to. They're not destroying the earth, like has been said, and that's a whole different episode. But his own cabinet, the own Liberal government, same way they bought Keystone XL, is essentially saying, yeah, despite all our rhetoric, people have to drill, and there's oil down there. So what do? Do they give the green light to a Canadian company in Alberta? No, they spent the whole beginning of 2022 saying we have to cap Alberta's production. We have to cut emissions in Alberta's production. But a Norwegian company comes along. Yeah, just take that little spot off the coast of Newfoundland there and it should be good. So where do all the profits go? I'm sure Canada, obviously, in their jurisdiction, they are going to gain profits. But guess what? It'll be federal government profits. There will be zero private profitability from this Norwegian company. All the private profits will go to a foreign country, and any revenue as far as tax goes or revenue sharing is going to go directly to the federal government. So
what we're going to penalize Albertan oil and natural gas.
Okay, right? Let me just put it this way. If I were the federal Liberal cabinet and I wanted to starve this nation of any wealth, any energy security, if I wanted to starve citizens of any sense of liberty, any sense of autonomy, financial opportunity, I don't know what you would do any differently than what the federal government is doing here with this foreign energy company. I don't know what else you would do. You're starving Canadian investors and you're granting the profits to foreign nations. Why? Because deep down, the Liberals hate Canada as a nation state. The Liberals just don't believe in this country. They don't. They believe that it is a platform for them to serve their reputation and to serve their legacy, but they have no interest in building security or profitability for ordinary Canadians.
And you can see it in how Alberta is responding to this Liberal government, right? The province of Alberta, you've never heard more calls for independence and that type of rhetoric. We've heard it in the past, but you've not heard it to the degree in which Alberta is really considering, do we leave this country? Like, you've got the Wild Rose Party, who is gaining in strength, saying these exact same things. And again, folks, you got to remember, it's in the context of our oil and natural gas are being penalized because they're being forced to a net zero emissions. Like, number one, we talked about how if you increase the tax on smoking, the idea is that people will smoke less because it costs too much. So the carbon tax is an incentivization or a penalization of using gasoline and oil. So the carbon tax penalizes everybody from production, supply, delivery, consumption, all of these things. The carbon tax penalizes people, so they want to use it less. Okay, well, that's bad for oil and natural gas production. Then you're telling, on top of that, you're regulating to the producers that they have to fit within a net zero plan in order to produce the oil, which is an impossibility. Then at the same time, 500 kilometers off the coast, you're letting a Norwegian company do what they would like and pay money directly to the federal government, but money that is completely in the hands of the federal government, which is penalizing its own citizens. The theme of this podcast is this Liberal government does not want Canadians to actually be able to afford their energy and to actually have an energy supply that is rich and warm and the tap is on and it's ever flowing. It is our own government that is getting in the way of Canadians being able to live affordably. And I'm saying that specifically because I received an email from the Liberal Party this morning. Someone who decided to put a prank on me and signed me up for all of the Liberal Party and the NDP and all that type of stuff. And they did some, sent me into some pretty other horrible places as well. But like, we literally have Chrystia Freeland this morning on the Liberal emails going out saying, look, it's time to get focus and get clarity, and it's time to make help Canadians have affordable living. That is the biggest lie on the planet. They don't care about the affordability of living. Folks, we in Canada, we could have our energy costs cut drastically if we would just have a more nationalist focus where we made sure that our supply and demand were up and then we sold into the world market. It's very simple.
It's true. It's a double-edged sword in a good way, in that our energy costs go down, our energy security goes up, and our net profits, both in private coffers, like companies that hire Canadians, and to our federal government in terms of revenue, everything goes up. And so in every way, we have the tools at our disposal, but they're just not politically viable to this Liberal government. What this Liberal government is shaping right now is a compliant citizenry that, quote, the world is on fire. This type of garbage rhetoric that we hear over and over and over again, that anything supporting private markets, anything supporting energy production, anything supporting liberty of, in terms of economy, is always a threat to humanity in some great way. Why? Because it decentralizes authority. This is what it's really about. It is a power play. So leftists are constantly saving the world from ourselves, and all they need is more money and more legislation and more restriction to do it. They do not want a robustly wealthy and independent and law-abiding citizenry because it is a decentralized form of power. And if you look at the progression of politics in Canada in general, we used to have part-time MPs. They would go and serve a session, but the vast majority of them, unless they were independently wealthy, had jobs through most of the year. Well, running this country has literally become a full-time, very well-paid job because the federal government has just grown and grown and grown and grown, and it sees itself as the solution to everything. And have Canadians become richer and richer and richer and richer? No, we are in the middle of an energy crisis. We have record levels of debt. We have inflation eating away at whatever savings we do have. We have investment fleeing Canada in terms of energy production. I mean... What else have you got up your sleeves, Liberals? What other promises can we expect as Canadian citizens? And what do we have to brace for? Essentially, living in Canada has become a game of protecting yourself from Liberal policies, from sheltering your wealth from confiscation or inflation, from protecting your family from invasive policies and restrictive policies. It's become a protection act as opposed to appreciating the liberty that they protect in us. It's actually us trying to protect it from them. And that's become par for the course living in Canada.
Let me read two scriptures to close our thoughts here. Everybody knows that a major verse that we've been talking about is Ecclesiastes 5, 8, and 9, which really focuses us towards localism or nationalism rather than looking outside of an area where someone is responsible. That is Ecclesiastes 5, 8, and 9. And I'm going to read that in a minute, but first I want to read Proverbs 13, 16, or Proverbs 13, 23. A poor man's field may produce abundant food, but injustice sweeps it away. Think about that for our country. Our country is a bountiful land of production, and it is injustice that sweeps that away. It is not the land's problem. It's not the people's problem. It is a concept of how to distribute goods and wealth that is an unjust concept that strips it away. And then I want to read Ecclesiastes 5, 8, and 9. If you see the poor oppressed in a district, so if you see people paying ridiculous amount of prices for oil and for gasoline in order to drive and that becoming increasingly out of reach for the average person without them having to lay awake at night and worry about it, and justice and rights denied, the ability to have cheap, affordable energy, do not be surprised at such things. For one official is eyed by the higher one, and over both of them are others still higher. But of extreme benefit to the land is a king who is committed to cultivated fields. If our king was committed, if our would-be king would be committed to producing the natural resources that we have responsibly and carefully, this country, again, we would not have people feeling so much of the pinch, so much of the increase of all these energy costs, because we would have much lower energy costs in our country. It is simply this government's policy. And you know, Tim, this didn't just wake up with the Liberals. We've had a major problem with our energy costs in relation to our production for many, many years. Canada needs to cut its energy costs by going back and producing more in our country.
And we have it. That's what's incredible, is that we have it. We are in one of the most mineral and resource-rich nations in the entire world. We have everything here. We have pulp and paper, lumber, minerals, oil, gold. We have everything here. Silver, nickel. I mean, goodness me. We have everything we need in this country. And yet, the more management we offload and upload to the federal government, it seems the more scarce things become, the more expensive they become, the more cumbersome they become, and they turn around and they send emails to you saying, we are going to make life more affordable for you. It is just a non sequitur. They don't have the ability to do it except by spending more of your money that they claim to be trying to save you. And of course, the carbon tax is framed exactly like that, that the vast majority of Canadians, they'll get back more than they pay. I'm sorry, but I don't believe it. And you brought up the scriptures. When Israel first wanted to enlist and appoint a king, a sovereign, you know, they had judges at the time, but power was more decentralized to the tribes and their elders and local governance. Israel said, we want to have a sovereign. We want to have a king who's going to lead us into army, into battle. You know, we want a powerful leader. Well, God turned around and said to the prophet, you know, if they want a king, I'll give them one. But you have to understand, this king is going to make life expensive. He's going to add taxes. He's going to want to buy horses and fill his barns. He's going to want to fill his war chest. You are going to be, he's going to take your best men to fight. He's going to take your best women for service in his palaces. The kings, this is human nature. Sovereigns and heads of state, they live with illusions of grandeur, of accomplishment, of pomp, of circumstance, of wealth. And I don't know of any leader that has not left federal government more financially enriched than when he arrived. Because this is the way humanity works. And so we need to stop as Canadians thinking, and conservatives especially, we need to get out of the trap of believing that the federal government is the unifying force in all of Canada. We don't need the federal government to tell us what being Canadian is like and how to develop natural resources. All of those expertise exist among the people, exist among the tribes, as it were, exist among the communities. And we need to return to a more local identity in terms of wealth and economy and exchange and trades, and all of those things need to be more localized. And we need to vote in politicians who are willing to actually relinquish power, actually cut spending, actually decommission all of the expansion that's gone on in the last 50, 60 years to actually decompress that stuff and administer it to a local level. If we had politicians who started campaigning on those premises, we would start to see more prosperity, as you pointed out, Mike, more prosperity coming to people, more justice coming across the land, more provision, lower costs, more affordability. It doesn't come by more government action. It actually comes by less. And when we start seeing that, we may see prosperity return to Canada in some way. So, Mike, I'll let you sign us off in your special way.
Yeah, so you know, there's a connection here, and the connection is when you have a government that is small and allows for private investment that maintains the law, then private individual capitalists build things, not governments. And it's very important that when you say those words, relinquish power, Tim, that we're talking about, you know, we don't villainize the private industry and sanctify the public industry. It is actually the opposite. It is the public industry that has their hand in your wallet. It is the private industry that has to be motivated by your wallet. There's a big difference between a guy walking around with his hand in your pocket and a guy walking around with his hand asking you if he can have some of your money in exchange for a product. So everybody, look, if you're, you know, Tim and I are talking outside of our pastoral wheelhouse sometimes here, where we're observing the world, we're trying to analyze these things for you. Join me on the weekend for tomorrow for an interview that I did with a gentleman named Bob Murphy. Bob Murphy is an economist, and he is going to talk specifically about how ridiculous these policies are for the sake of the economy, even if they were to meet any of their objectives. And as stated by themselves, none of these policies can meet their objectives. So their objectives are unrealistic. The policies are horrible for the economy. Some of the stuff that Tim and I have been talking about here, he's going to touch on, and it's a great interview. So please listen to that tomorrow. Tim, thanks for coming on. Everybody, Godspeed.
Thanks for tuning in to Liberty Dispatch, a united front to restore liberty and justice in Canada. Please subscribe to our podcast and Rumble channel, as well as visit our website at www.libertycoalitioncanada.com.